Welcome to the Belfast Men's Health Group podcast with myself, Paul O'Kane, and Shane Martin. Shane is a psychologist dedicated to teaching the very best evidence-based psychology to help people protect their mental health and enhance the quality of their lives. Shane has been a keynote speaker at a number of conferences on a range of topics around well-being and positive mental health recovery and indeed happiness. So we're delighted to have Shane today with us, going to tell us a wee bit about himself, his life, and how to live our best life. So Shane, thanks very much for agreeing to have a wee chat with us.
No problem, I'm looking forward to it.
We'll get straight into the podcast, Shane. Tell us a wee bit about yourself, maybe your influences, or how would you describe yourself?
Well, I'm a native of County Monaghan, so I'm proud of my heritage. I'm from a place called Carrickmacross in South Monaghan. My nearest big town when I was growing up would have been Dundalk in County Louth. I was sent away to boarding school for secondary school in Monaghan town, in North Monaghan. There's actually quite a big difference between North and South Monaghan, the accent in particular. But you know, I was sent away because I wasn't working very hard and my results were very poor. Discipline and study was what my parents prioritised. But, you know, I came to, I suppose, boarding school successfully. I got a good leaving cert result and I pursued teaching first. So my first career was in secondary school teaching. I would have worked primarily within special education at the time. It was called remedial education. You wouldn't use that terminology nowadays. But I was a remedial teacher. You'd now be called a learning support teacher.
Yes.
And I would have worked as a teacher for maybe, I think, close to 12 years. So it was a permanent, entrable position. Like some of the lads that I shared the house with for the last year of college, a lot of them didn't end up in teaching because it was so hard to get a teaching job. I was very, very lucky in that I had a permanent, pensionable, incremental post. And I think it caused a lot of shock at the time when I was sent. I resigned. And I could have taken a five-year career break at the time. I could have held on to my job. But I resigned completely to go back to college and to pursue psychology.
And what was your drive? What was missing?
I think I understand it more now than I did then. Mm-hmm. I think at the time, you know, if you'd been a friend of mine, Paul, I would have been saying things like, I want a new challenge. And I probably was finding, I suppose, special education. I'd reached a stage where, you know, I could teach the sounds of the alphabet in my sleep. Mm-hmm. And it was very important work to be doing, but it wasn't challenging me anymore. So I probably was getting a bit bored in it, and I mean that in the kindest possible way. Mm-hmm. That's the way I see it now. And there were a lot of psychologists coming in to speak with me about the children that I was teaching. And maybe they inspired me. Maybe there was part of me thinking, I wouldn't mind knowing more about what you're doing. But that's not the psychology I pursued. I actually pursued clinical psychology because, you know, I probably wanted to break away from education totally to make a clean break. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I pursued psychology was because I wanted to help people. I think that's the right answer whenever any psychologist is asked why they pursued psychology. That's the right answer to give. Mm-hmm. But I knew people within my own family, within my own friendship network, and within my own community. And something seemed to have happened to them in that they lost the spring in their step. They weren't sucking in the oxygen of life anymore. They seemed to have fallen into a dark place. And I felt very sorry that that had happened. And it was part of me that said I'd love to know why their lights went out. And I'd like to dedicate the next part of my working life to helping people like that.
Mm-hmm. And in growing up, did you have... Well, maybe not growing up, but even in your teaching career, any mentors or people of inspiration?
I would have been, I suppose, blessed with two wonderful parents. Sadly, they were taken far too early. My father has gone 22 years now. My mother's mm-hmm. gone nearly 13 years. But they were good, decent country people. And there's no such thing as a perfect parent. I'm not one either. But they got a lot of the simple things right. And when I look back, I realize that both those parents inspired me in many, many ways. Like my father was an optimist. I miss him for his optimism. You know, if you ever had a worry or a concern, he always reassured you. And not only that, he was resourceful. He gave you options. He gave you solutions for your worries. So that was a powerful asset to have in the family. And he had a great sense of humor. And a humor carries you an awful long way, actually. It carries you through dark times in particular. And he was a painter. So he was a very creative man. And he would have, you know, he would have, at one stage in Carrickmacross, he would have had maybe over 20 shop fronts painted by himself. And I'm talking about gold leaf script. I'm talking about where it might take 2 weeks to paint the sign. Like, there was no PVC signage at that time. There were no stickers that you could get from a computer. It had to be spaced out. And I always looked up to him, literally, from holding the ladder to being, I suppose, mesmerized by his skills. My mother was a quiet, shy woman. She was a nurse, but she had great compassion and kindness in her. And she worried a lot about people. She probably worried more than she should have about us. But I think both my parents, when I look back at them, there's a lot of the traits that they had which were important in people in general. And I'd like to think that I picked them up. I remember when I was at primary school, I used to be always fascinated with missionaries of any denomination, of people who give their lives to others from very early on, people who leave their own culture behind them and go out to work with impoverished people in foreign lands and maybe take their own lives, you know, put them in risk. I always was fascinated by people who give themselves completely to other people. And there's probably a bit of that in me, in that there's a lot of work I do which is in the service of others. Like, I'm paid for it, but I really love doing it. I love helping people.
And well, moving on, and helping people or trying to get the spring back in someone's step, what advice could you give our listeners to living their best life?
Well, I think sometimes a long-term plan is very depressing. Like, if I picked up a book, and if it said 50 steps is the life I want to have, that's probably too many steps for me. And I think a lot of us make a mistake in that we let the past throw a shadow over the rest of our lives. And to a degree, I understand that, because the past can hurt and wound us, and it can steal from us. But you can't change any of it, ever. You can learn from the past, which I think is wisdom, really. And then I meet other people who worry about the future. And they have bucket loads of anxiety in their days. But the pandemic taught us a lesson that sometimes we needed to be taught beforehand. We don't govern the earth. We're all passing through. And there's so much of our lives that we've no control over. Now, if you think about that for a long time, you'd be very anxious for a long time. But I'm a firm believer, Paul, in changing this day now. Because anyone that's listening to me right now, if they're tuned in, when they do tune in, they can colour this day brilliantly with the hours left in it yet. So it's never too late to turn a corner. It's never too late to embrace a better quality of life. And we're not puppets and strings. It's not all genetically predetermined. But if you take the small step of taking this day, prioritising this day, I'd put my money on it that anyone can have a better day today than yesterday if they work on it. So, like, a half an hour brisk walk would be a good starting point. Like, structured daily exercise rivals most antidepressants in most studies nowadays. So, like, it's daily. It's not exercise now and again that makes a difference. But you could treat yourself to at least a half an hour brisk walk. The second thing you could do today, if you wanted to enhance your mood or let the light in, would be maybe to choose a beautiful place to walk. So, like, we live in a lovely island, so, you know, we're not too far away from a beautiful place, be it a lake shore, riverbank, the sea. And new research confirmed that it's not just the walking sometimes, but it's where we're walking that's giving us the lift. Mm-hmm. So if you're smelling the herbs on the forest bank, you know, if you're wondering if they're a different smell this today with the rain than they were when it was dry, if you're sitting at a bench, which I do here in Sligo and Loch Gill, and look out at this beautiful lake that's so still, you'd always think you could walk with it. But I become one with that stillness when I'm sitting on that bench, and I find it great inner peace. And then I might walk on the beaches of Ross's Point or Strigia or Strand Hill, and, you know, something happens to me spiritually there, and that I become aware that there's something much more powerful, more important, beyond me, out there, that continues to happen. So, like, even during the pandemic, the tide came in, the sun rose, the sun went down, the moon peeked out, at, you know, in the darkness, the stars shone, the boards. I suppose even during the pandemic, people were wondering what the boards did in Louder, but I think it was probably the first time that people were listening to the boards. So if you can connect with nature, there's therapeutic benefits from that. And the third thing I'd recommend as well, just for today, would be to do something that you love doing. Because a lot of people just walk and sleep, and they want to know why they're feeling so miserable. And the greatest thing you can give a child, I think, is a hobby. And you should give them two or three hobbies, and they'll prove to be lifelong friends. But it's hobbies that we tend to give up. As we grow older, we stop doing the things that make us tick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to take the guitar down from the hot press and to buy strings for today, to dust down the piano, to, you know, to buy canvases and easels or reference on paint, to put your name down for a new course. Like, even in recent years, I've on a residential course on antique clock repair. And I've about 20 clocks in this house now. Wagged wall, cuckoo clocks, drop dial clocks, French mantel clocks. Mm-hmm. I'm driving them all dented. But when I sit to fix a clock, I lose sense of time. I lose consciousness of myself, others, and the world around me. And that's called psychological flow. And you get flow from hobbies, you know, from challenges that we want to take on. And I think that would be amazing if someone could maybe reconnect with something that they no longer have been doing, or even to try something new today would be massive.
Mm-hmm. It's never too late. It's never too late
to turn a corner, Paul.
It's
never too late to embrace a better quality of life. I fully agree with you. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a much bigger say in it than we know. But we can be our own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. We can put ourselves down a lot of the time. And I think the good news for your listeners is that very simple things make a huge difference in a world that has become far too complicated.
Mm-hmm. You've sort of answered my next question, which is how do you look after yourself? But you've just really elaborated on that, Shane.
When I moved to Sligo, like I no longer live in Monaghan, we moved as a family here just before the pandemic. Because heart disease and cancer is in my family, and because I read the research about reducing risk to both of those diseases, I decided to walk at least 6 kilometres every day for the rest of my life. So, like, it took a while to form that habit. Mm-hmm. It would have taken me at least 2 to 3 weeks, but it now happens every day. It mightn't be 6 kilometres in one go, but definitely 6, if not more, before 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And that, it doesn't matter if it's raining or anything. I always get that in. And the research indicates, Paul, that after 6 weeks, you know, your mood improves and you sleep better. And I'm a skeptic, I suppose, as well as being a scientist. I tested it and it works. Mm-hmm. But the snag is daily. So there's no real research which shows a bit of exercise now and again has any positive outcome. It's when it becomes a daily habit. So that's one thing I do. And the other thing I do is that I'm very big into my hobbies. My new hobby is antique clock repairs. I can French polish and veneer now. But I'm also big into music. So music would be my flow between listening to music and playing music. I'm sitting in a room here with a guitar and a piano in it. And that's my go-to when I'm feeling you know, stressed, lonely, challenged. And there's great therapy in music. Even the science indicates that.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, did you learn music as a boy, or was this, is this something later on you took up?
Yeah, I would have been, my first, I remember asking Santa Claus for a typewriter. I must have been a bit of a nerd. but I was deeply shocked when I opened up the case on my knees in the hallway and I discovered the piano accordion in it.
Brilliant.
I was absolutely raging. I went around all the neighbours to see if anyone had my typewriter because I got someone's piano accordion by mistake. But with lessons, I became quite good at the piano accordion. Now, I was playing classical music, which I didn't like. And then I did the 8 grades on the piano. I didn't like the music I was being taught then either. But like when I was in college training to be a teacher, I was busking for the summers abroad. I remember doing very well in Copenhagen in Denmark. I was making more money with my piano accordion than my friends were in Burger King.
Yeah.
And you need lots of money over there because the price of a burger in Burger King is like a fillet steak. But you know, my music was always a great friend. I never went poor when you have an accordion or a guitar to play. Mm-hmm. And it's also a great bonder with people. You know, mm-hmm. There's always a sing-song or something, and you meet people with music. So mm-hmm. I suppose I thanked my parents for that. Maybe mm-hmm. they were right to get Santi to give me the accordion rather than the typewriter. You know, and I thank them for that indirectly, I suppose, that they opened the world of music to me at a very young age, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, Shane, I always ask us, what is your dream job? You could be in it, or it may well be a musician, but I can't put words in your mouth.
Yeah, well, when I was young, I wanted to be in Top of the Pops. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. I was part of a duet. I think we were trying to be the new Simon and Garfunkel, but no one told us at the time that we had that already. but I tried hard to be the new Simon and Garfunkel with our own song. So I think as a teenager, I would have loved to have been a successful pop star or rock star. Nowadays, I'm in my 50s, and the one thing I love more than is writing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I am a published poet, but poetry will never pay your bills.
Wow.
You know, so it's a very small market.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were to go into Waterstones in Belfast and watch the poetry section, very few people go over. And mm-hmm. usually, I often do it. You only go over to look at them and they walk away without buying any. But if you have a worldwide market with, say, like Seamus Heaney and people like that, it might be different. But poetry is very small. It would be my dream job to read poems and mm-hmm. for that to pay my bills. I remember being asked once to speak at the Patrick Kavanagh Poetry Festival, and well over 100 people in the hall. I was sitting on a stool, and I was just shooting the breeze, talking about how I felt about things and reading poems from my first collection.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I remember thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful if this could pay my mortgage?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
I said, what a lovely job to have. But I think I now know that poetry is something which will never, ever be something that you can depend on. But you asked for my dream job. Mm-hmm. So it's one that I have in my imagination anyway.
Lovely. Well, where can our listeners find you?
Well, I'm in the... If they want to find me physically, you might meet me in Thomas Connolly's pub on a Friday. I enjoy a pint of Guinness in the oldest pub in Sligo Town.
Wow.
It was opened in 1870. It's as it was then. It's a long, narrow, dark pub. And there's jazz music played in it from 5:30 to 7:30 every Friday. And a lot of people come in for one pint and it's kicked off for the weekend. So
mm-hmm.
they could find me there. They could find me on the beaches in Sligo. But if they want to find me online,
yep.
which is, I think, what you were asking
that's
about,
that's the
Paul,
one, yep, yep.
It's Mood Watchers, M-O-O-D, not Moon Watchers. That's a cult.
Yeah.
Don't go that one.
No,
if you go to moodwatchers.com, you'll find all you need to know about the work I do and the courses that I deliver and that kind of thing as well. I'm in the Hawkswell Theatre in Sligo at the end of January, Paul.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to come down on the 26th of January, it's a Friday, I'm doing a show called Rise and Renew, which will be, I suppose, a mix of psychology, poetry, storytelling and humour.
Yeah.
And tickets are selling very well. I did it about 5 years ago and it sold out. So
perfect.
If anyone wants to come down and make a weekend in Sligo on the 26th of January, maybe they should go onto the Hawkswell website to get information on that.
Okay. Perfect. Shane, the time has flown past and I have to say it's been brilliant listening to you. We'll get this podcast up ASAP and thanks very much.
And well done on the podcast and the good work you do, Paul.
Not at all. Thank you. And you never know, you might see me and Brian down there with our waves come the end of January.
If you're ever in Thomas College, you can tap me on the shoulder. I might even buy you a drink.
Okay. There you go. Thank you, Shane.
Cheers.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
All the best now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.